Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us, and happy Valentine's Day. Gift a plant for Valentine's Day from the Arizona Republic by Roseanne Leparco. Is there a special person on your Valentine's Day list? Why not give them a plant? From heart-shaped foliage, red flowers, and subtle fragrances, there are many plant options you can find for that special someone. Here are some ideas. Miniature roses. Instead of cutting roses, a miniature rose plant in a pretty pot will not only provide cheer indoors, but it can also be planted outside in the spring. These plants are readily available, come in a variety of colors, and are easy to care for. Violets are next. Violets are an especially meaningful choice for a Valentine born in February, their official birth month flower. The ancient Greeks considered the violet a symbol of love and used them in various love potions. These plants can bloom year-round indoors, and depending on the variety, could also be transplanted outdoors. Then there's cyclamen. With its heart-shaped leaves, this choice is perfect. Cyclamen flowers come in white, pink, red, or lavender. The heart-shaped leaves also have silvery or light green markings. Plants are sold as large, showy specimens or miniature varieties. Plants need bright light and cooler temperatures indoors. Dish gardens are nice in that they combine different plants resembling a miniature garden in a container. There are also many different houseplants to pick from. Orchids or indoor azaleas are nice. Houseplants with small flowers represent loyalty, while plants with only foliage like bamboo represent good luck. So, instead of cut flowers, consider the gift of a plant this Valentine's Day. Also from today's Arizona Republic, Advice to Save Struggling Houseplants by Becky Wern. These last few years, gardeners have been dazzled with a variety of beautiful houseplants available, but the winter months can be the time for the houseplant's discontent. Some of the houseplants we enjoy originated on humid jungle floors, forest understories, or in the case of succulents, arid desert or sunny Mediterranean areas. None of these resembles the interiors of our homes. In these darker months, our houseplants miss the brightness of the sunny months of summer. During our cold snaps, our heaters run and our houses get painfully dry for the plants. You may find plant edges that are browning or leaves that are browning and dropping. Plants also dry out more rapidly as the heaters run to keep us warm. The alternate, and it is common, is that we overwater at this time of the year. With the shorter days, our plants have slowed their growth. They need less water and more humidity. Grouping plants together, especially on trays with gravel and a little water, allows the plants to share the humidity. Plants seem to grow better when they are together. One of the things I have learned is that the light coming through my windows is not nearly as bright as I think. It turns out our eyes trick us. We react to lower light by enlarging the pupils in our eyes, allowing more light in. We feel like the room is brighter, but this doesn't change the amount of light coming in through the window, and it doesn't help our plants. An accurate measurement comes from a light meter. Honestly, when I got one, I didn't believe it. I wanted to believe my eyes, which told me it was fairly bright there next to the north-facing window. It wasn't. The light meter was correct. The light was dim. My eyes were compensating. My plants could not. It's pretty logical. South and west-facing windows are going to have fairly high light values. East and north-facing windows are going to have low light values. The lowest light areas will support some plants. If you have 25 to 100-foot candles, you can probably grow pothos, snake plants, ZZ plants, monsteras, fascia, and cast iron plants. Cast iron plants are usually seen as 3 feet tall and dark green, but you can find them online 10 inches tall and speckled or with pale lines up the leaves. They are not inexpensive, but they reproduce quickly and grow outside in shady areas as well as indoors. They really are a winner. Philodendrons and bamboo palms also survive in low light. In medium light levels, 50 or 100 to 500-foot candles, you can grow all of the above plants, plus grape ivies, wax plants, asparagus, Chinese evergreens, corn plants, false aurelias, fascia, and monstera, which seem to be very popular right now. Parlor palms work at this light level, as do spider plants, peace lily, and lady palms. At this level, you might be able to grow African violets. If you have trouble with them, give them a bit more light. At over 500 foot candles, there is often partial sunlight. Begonias, peperomia, holiday cactus, gloxinia, some orchids, staghorn ferns, and jade plants do well here. Wax plants do well at this higher level too, and may need it for flowering, as do almost all of the plants that do well with less light. I chuckled when I saw a pygmy date palm listed for indoor plants, maybe if you have a large conservatory. Pygmy date palms are lovely, but they have 2 to 3 inches spiny thorns at the base of their fronds. These thorns, if they should stab you while you're pruning your plant or even watering or weeding, tend to infect humans. It's common enough that it is recognized in many medical facilities, probably best outdoors. At the higher light levels, you can grow plants tolerant of lower light levels. In the brightest light, a sunroom perhaps, a room with lots of direct sunlight, croton, geraniums, coleus, calanchos, hibiscus, ponytail palms, and aloes all will be happy. Potted citrus would also work here. Temperatures matter too. Even the newer windows conduct cold and heat through them. Be aware that your plants don't need to be right up against the glass in the winter where the cold temperatures will affect them. Houseplants like the temperatures we are comfortable with, and most of us aren't comfortable at 45 degrees. You could check the temperature next to your windows with a thermometer. Houseplants prefer temperatures between 60 and 85 degrees Fahrenheit. Our days seem as short as ever, but they are getting longer. It doesn't seem like much now, but it will grow every day until June. Starting in March, when everything seems to awaken, apply a dilute fertilizer into your houseplants. Some will begin growing again. Spring will be obvious outside. Of course, there will be mosquitoes. Oh well, gardeners, on we go. From the February-March issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, Charlie Ray, landscape designer, who writes, "Our aesthetic is to create immersive desert gardens wherever we work, to celebrate biodiversity in the most artful way, and to create landscapes that celebrate nature in all its glory." Born and raised in Arizona, Charlie Ray has deep roots in the Sonoran Desert, with the area around the house he grew up in functioning as his playground. This is also where he developed a strong connection to nature and all the beauty therein. Being outdoors is truly a sensory experience. The sounds of birds and trickling water, the feeling of peace they bring, the trees that create shade, the plants that attract butterflies, the paths that wind through the landscape, and the sitting areas where these things can be enjoyed. It all matters, he says, crediting his parents' love for nature and his interaction with the beautiful exterior environments they created at their home, with exposing him at an early age to the subtleties of nature growing and evolving. It was a great learning experience, he remarks. As an adult, nature became the muse that inspired Ray to found a landscape design business called The Green Room, which has allowed him to create extraordinary surroundings for others for more than 2 decades. The path I took was very formative, he notes. I had a wonderful imagination from a young age and always excelled in the art programs in school. My college studies were multidisciplinary and primarily focused on architecture, and my passions in life and my inspiration has always revolved around architecture, design, and the natural environment. After graduating with a Bachelor of Fine Arts from Arizona State University, the decision to have my own design studio was a matter of following my heart and combining my love of nature with my technical skill and artistic talents to realize my dream. Ray's firm has become nationally recognized and now employs 12 team members collaborating on some 50 projects ranging from residential to commercial to institutional at any one time. Life is a journey, Ray reflects. Every step along the way guides you to the next one. My goal and what gives me purpose is to connect people to nature through my work, and being able to engage with nature in a garden that is always evolving is what drives me to create exceptional experiences for our clients. These experiences are admired by many design professionals with whom Ray has worked. Interior design from managing partner Scott Burdick worked closely with Ray on their landscape design, which was one of Ray's early projects. Charlie is very collaborative, but brings very fresh and out-of-the-box ideas to the table, Burdick notes. He also has very sophisticated tastes and ideas that are more worldview than is typical for an Arizona landscape designer. His designs are modern, bold, and extremely high-end. Masters of the Southwest award-winning interior designer David Michael Miller, who has worked with Ray in a number of projects over the years, describes the landscape designer's style as wonderful and naturalistic. His eye for composition, texture, and richness is very keen. He has a natural talent and is passionate about his work. Ray says the process involved in creating the immersive native landscapes that are his trademark begins with analyzing the site, understanding the architecture and the client's aesthetics, and deciding how to bring nature into the environment. Everything is unique to each project we do. We don't have a formula, he points out. All of our work is artfully inspired and aimed at creating elevated and harmonious atmospheres. Ecology, too, is paramount to the work Ray does. We need to be good stewards of our land, he explains. To that end, we work with a native palette that includes cactus, creosote, and beautiful specimen trees that we rescue from development sites. I think of these trees as living sculpture. They are nature's artwork, and the more twisted and gnarly they are, the better. Seeing the dappled light come through their leaves gives me goosebumps. Architect Patricia Sukart notes, Charlie's use of salvaged materials gives his landscapes a soulful quality, allowing one to be embraced by desert plants that have existed for years. His design focus on creating tranquil outdoor rooms where the landscape weaves seamlessly through the architecture, spaces where one is always surrounded by the colors of desert blooms, and native plants. Rather than simply observing the landscape, you interact with it. Charlie's landscapes are a perfect reflection of his personality, gentle, thoughtful, and filled with positive energy, she adds. He strives to bring these qualities to every project, creating spaces that feel both grounding and uplifting. A project Ray is currently working on in Tucson is a perfect example of this. We will be creating a child-friendly therapeutic garden in Tucson in conjunction with a humanitarian design/build practice called Office for the New Earth, or ONE. They have built some wonderful healing spaces for children in refugee camps in Europe, he explains. I feel very moved by their work, and I have a great desire to realize a similar endeavor for the struggling families in Tucson. Our mission is to connect children and families with natural spaces that allow them to breathe and play freely. Ray says the completed project, dubbed Oasis for the Senses, will be a beautiful, safe, and uplifting environment where children and families in need can engage with nature and each other. It will be built on the terrain of Second Sky, a community center in South Tucson, which is currently a vast open space of gravel with no existing ecosystem, making the need for landscaping fundamental for a nurturing experience, Ray notes. When complete, the oasis will feature rolling hills, adventurous pathways, shaded play structures, a curved water stream with stepping stones, a meadow maze of desert grasses that leads to playful art pieces, and desert shrubs such as sage and thyme that create a calming olfactory atmosphere. In addition, mesquite and Palo Verde trees will provide shade and color, while plants with soft textures will create whispering sounds and dappled light. Our aim for this project is for it to be an example for other places, Ray says. We're using the runoff water from nearby businesses to feed this oasis. Everything matters, and water is life. Ray is quick to say that there are many things that give him joy and purpose. I love the personal connections I have with my clients and design team. I love spending time in nature and being free to express my thoughts and ideas in the most elevated and beautiful way, he notes. I feel very privileged to do what I do. It's truly a gift. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 6 pretty but problematic perennials you should never plant in your garden. Steer clear of these troublesome perennials and plant these better-behaved alternatives instead, by Megan Hughes. In my garden, I have a few of what I call perennial troublemakers. They're the ones that turned out to have a dark side lurking beyond the promises of prolific summer blooms or the ability to tolerate the harshest heat and drought without missing a beat. In truth, their nonstop flowers result in tons of seeds that go everywhere, or their toughness is actually thanks to rampant growth that threatens to smother every living thing in a 10-foot radius. It feels like an endless struggle to keep them contained, leaving me wondering why I ever planted them in the first place. Save yourself from all these frustrations by avoiding these problematic perennials in your garden. Plus, I've got suggestions for much better behaved lookalikes you can grow instead. First on the list, Lily of the Valley. Yeah, I know, this one is a classic garden plant, beloved for its sweetly scented white bell-like flowers in early spring and ability to thrive in dry shade where not much else will grow. But I've come to really dislike Lily of the Valley because, a year or two after planting, it starts to spread like wild, choking out nearby plants. Once it's established, reining in this aggressive spreader requires relentless vigilance. Plant this instead. Foam flower is a native plant that also can grow in shady spots but won't take over the garden. Though not fragrant, its frothy spring flowers attract pollinators and subvarieties offer interesting foliage. Second on the list of six, perennial bachelor's button. A catalog description focused on a parade of spring and summer flowers and easy care can beguile those who've never grown perennial bachelor's button. But it has a hyper-reseeding nature you'll find much less appealing. The first year you'll have one clump of it, and the next year your garden is inundated with 15 clumps. Beware, perennial bachelor's button also goes by names like mountain bluet, cornflower, and basket flower, but all are bad news. Plant this instead. For early summer color, plant well-behaved pollinator favorite penstemon instead of perennial bachelor's button. This plant comes in lots of different varieties, including those with vibrant purple and blue flowers, if that's the look you're after. Third on the list, chameleon plant. Heart-shaped leaves decorated with splashes of white, green, pink, and yellow easily dazzle those unfamiliar with chameleon plant. But that admiration will quickly turn to dismay when this vigorous perennial begins spreading everywhere. Plus, once it's sunk its tenacious roots into your garden, it's nearly impossible to get rid of. Even herbicides don't slow it down much, so please don't fall for its cute, colorful leaves if you see it in the garden center. Plant this instead. There are many other well-behaved ground cover plants like creeping thyme or barrenwort that won't give you the hassle the chameleon plant will. Number four is false sunflower. Don't be fooled by false sunflower. Its garden behavior is nothing like true members of the sunflower family. False sunflower spreads aggressively by underground roots to form large colonies of plants. It will grow right over and through nearby perennials and shrubs, making it especially tough to evict without harming the plants it has engulfed. Plant this instead. Consider growing perennial sunflower for similar pollinator-friendly flowers on plants that aren't bent on taking over the world. Number five, purple loosestrife. This perennial has a rap sheet. It's listed as a noxious weed in many states because it overtakes wetlands and crowds out native species. Purple loosestrife is quickly recognizable thanks to its upright purple flower spikes that bloom from midsummer through fall. Although it's banned from sale in many states, it still makes its way into gardens. Uninformed friends sometimes offer a clump or two from their garden. This is one gift to refuse. And then kindly fill in your friend on its invasive nature. Plant this instead. For a long-lasting punch of purple in the garden, plant native purple coneflower or blazing star instead of purple loosestrife. Number six on the list of perennials you should never plant, mint. This perennial herb has wonderfully fragrant and flavorful leaves, but once you plant mint in your garden, you're likely to have it around forever. It can regenerate from the smallest bits of root or stem left behind if you try to dig it out. Plus, it will reseed itself everywhere if you allow it to flower. Plant this instead. Lesser calamint is a perennial in the mint family that offers fragrant foliage. However, it doesn't spread aggressively, it holds up well through heat and drought, and its prolific flowers attract an array of pollinators. Coming up at Desert Botanical Garden, Food Revolution, the Devourer Culinary Classic, February 21st through 22nd. The stunning scenery of the Desert Botanical Garden will provide a beautiful backdrop for this local event that brings together the chefs, winemakers, brewers, distillers, and artisans revolutionizing Arizona's culinary scene. Vendors include Clever Koi, Trist Cafe, and Blue Fire Grill. 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. for general admission. Early entry begins at 10 a.m. Tickets start at $150. Desert Botanical Garden is located at 1201 North Galvin Parkway in Phoenix. And if you'd like to know more about this event, go to devourgoodfood.com. And if you're heading into the Tucson area anytime soon, remember the Tucson Botanical Gardens. Visit an urban oasis in the heart of Tucson offering mature trees and expertly cultivated foliage, specialty gardens such as the cactus and succulent garden, barrio garden, and herb garden highlight the diversity of native plants. Located on the site of the historic Porter property, the Tucson Botanical Gardens is now celebrating 50 years of living beauty. Location is 2150 North Albernon Way in Tucson. The number to call if you'd like more information is 520-326-9686 or go to TucsonBotanical.org. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called The Bubba Bush. It was written by Paula L. Cilici, and there's a quote here from Mary Jo Putney. What one loves in childhood stays in the heart forever. The Bubba Bush. We stood hand in hand at the edge of the garden. The summer sunshine was warm and comforting on our backs as we gazed out upon the neat loamy rows of carrots, beans, lettuce, and squash. I was 3, nearly 4 then, and my father, strong and impossibly tall, was the gentle fairy tale giant who completely owned my heart. "Mama tells me you don't want to give up the bubbup," he said. His deep voice was solemn as he bent his head to catch the worried look in my eyes. I gave the pacifier, my beloved bubbup, a few good tugs with my lips and tongue and my cheeks hollowing with the effort. I could sense Mama watching us from the kitchen window, but I didn't dare look back. "You're almost 4 now, honey. No longer a baby. Only babies suck on bubbups all the time." I looked away, looked toward a noisy bumblebee sipping nectar from the face of a marigold flower. I loved my bubbup, loved the giggly sound of the name I'd given it. Loved the comfort it gave me as I drew on its slippery, rubbery tip. I didn't want them to take it away. My father gave my small hand a gentle squeeze, then tugged the pacifier out of my mouth. It made a hollow sound like a cork popping from a bottle. He crouched down in front of me, low enough to bring us to eye level, and then he squeezed my hand again and made me look at him. "Did you hear what I said?" he asked gently. I nodded. I wanted to cry. My bubbup dangled from Papa's long fingers just out of reach. "Do you remember a few weeks ago," Papa said, his eyes briefly wandering toward the garden, then back to mine, "when your mother and I brought you out here to help plant all those vegetables?" "I remember," I said, giving a sniff. "Do you remember how we planted seeds from packets with pictures of all the different kinds of vegetables on the fronts?" Again I nodded, remembering the tender pleasantness of that day. "And then we watered them and watched very carefully every day until we saw the tiny plants beginning to grow?" "Mm-hmm. Well, I bet if we plant your bubbup just like we did those seeds, in a few days, maybe even tomorrow, we can come back to find a bubbup bush growing right where we planted it." I stared at him, big eyes. I said, "Really?" "Really. But of course it would mean you're giving it up so that we could plant it," he said. "Do you think you could do that? Would it have bubbups on it?" "No, Paula, but would it have something else very special?" "What?" "Well, with a bubbup bush, you have to grow it to find out." He kept fingering the bubbup, and I kept looking at it, trying to decide. It would be fun to grow a bubbup bush, I thought. "But we could dig a hole in a very special place that you alone get to choose. We'll cover it up with some soft soil, just like a blanket. And then we'll sprinkle it with water from the watering can. You know how you love to sprinkle," he said, the corners of his mouth tipping upward in one of his special daddy smiles. I kept eyeing the bubbup. Eyeing the long fingers, grasping the pink ring on the end of it. How long would it take to grow?" "Well, that depends. If I remember correctly, I think bubbups don't take very long to grow at all. If we plant it right now, go away, then come back tomorrow morning, I'll bet we'll find a bubbup bush growing." I looked the garden over, searching for a special spot. "There," I said, pointing with my tiny finger toward the huge, yellow, nodding blossoms standing like merry maids all in a row near the fence. "Next to the sunshine flowers." "Excellent choice," Papa said. "Just where I would have picked." He smoothed my hair from my cheek. "Let's go get the shovel." I followed him into the shed, tightening my lips and tongue as if to suck on the bubbup that wasn't ever going to be there anymore. I didn't sleep very well that night, dreaming about the bubbup. missing it terribly, but also wondering dreamily what a real-life live Bubba bush would look like. Would it truly be there in the morning when Mama, Papa, and I went out to look for it? Is it there? I cried, first thing in the morning. Still in my jammies, I raced out of the house across the lawn toward the garden to see. I think so, Mama said, her voice full of laughter as she followed close behind. I think I see it, Papa said. He took Mama's hand, keeping in step. And then I saw it too, a plump, silvery green bush nestled between two sunshine flowers right where we'd planted the bubbub. As I drew closer, my bare feet barely skimming the warm earth between the rows, I could see that the bush was abloom with dozens of purple spear-like fronds. Fairy wands, I thought. I knelt in the dirt and touched a fragrant spear, bending my nose toward its familiar fragrance. Mama, I squealed, breathing deep. It smells like Mama. I looked over my shoulder. They were standing at the edge of the garden, and Papa was kissing Mama's cheek. I watched him take a deep breath, too, and then he nuzzled her neck. Yes, it does, he said, grinning. Would you like to cut a stem? You could wear it in your hair. Oh, yes, then I'd smell like Mama, too. I looked at Mama. Can I? Why, of course, dear, Mama said. Here, let me help. She laughed and gave Papa a big hug, and then she came over and helped me twine one of the fragrant purple stems into my hair. I was grinning from ear to ear, the proudest three-year-old in the world. I'm sure I must have missed my bubbub for some time, but all I remember is the happiness. To this day, the scent of lavender reminds me of my mother, and of my gentle father and all his wisdom, and that summer day so long ago we planted a little girl's babyhood and grew something magical in its place. A bubbub bush and a garden of memories. That story is called The Bubbub Bush. It was written by Paula L. Salisi, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.